there's a lot of offensive lobbing that's going on. And it's funny because I was the guy that said 2024 was going to be the year of the lob. I don't know if I was the guy. You know, I'm sure there were some people that said it, other people that said it. But I was always, like I was saying, you know, the offensive lob is going to be a very important shot, especially for right side players. And I've hit zero offensive lobs in 2024, by the way. Literally zero. I don't have the cojones to do it. I just don't feel comfortable doing it for whatever reason. You know, sometimes you get into a match or get into a game. It's funny, like a lot of players think that pros are like immune to this, the whole concept of feeling comfortable doing something in practice, and then you get into the game. I'm not immune to that. I know most of the, it's not like the pros are immune to that. Okay, so I am here completely freestyling this podcast. I was thinking of stuff to talk about, and I'm just having a tough time. So I'm going to kind of just freestyle, and it's funny. I'm here in New York City. We're at the Empire Hotel here. I'm in like a maybe 200 square foot hotel room. Going to play the Major League Pickleball in New York City in a few days. And yeah, just going to kind of talk about everything that's been going on. One thing that I think is definitely worth talking about is just this upcoming MLP seems to be super fun venue. We're going to be playing in Central Park. New York City is my favorite place, I think, probably in the world. It's either New York City or, yeah, I don't want to say New York City or Vegas. It's definitely New York City. It's funny when I tell people that, they're like, dang, like New York City or Vegas. Like, I don't know what that says about me, that those are my two favorite places. But anyway, super awesome venue. We just played a tournament in Atlanta. Yeah, that's where we were at. We played Atlanta, and it was my last tournament for now with Anna. As you guys probably know, I hope that Josh won't use this as the intro, but yeah, obviously Anna and I broke up, so you know, off the court, and now that was our last tournament together for now on the court too. So, going to kind of see, I think I'm definitely excited to play with new mixed partners and just kind of get a feel for just changing it up. I think that's one of the fun things about it. Obviously, as you guys, anybody that's in a relationship knows, probably playing with your significant other is not that easy. It can come with some challenges. Anna and I did it actually pretty well. We were always good about it, but I think it'll definitely be fun to mix it up and just kind of see what is next. So, yeah, we... I think one of the things that I should probably talk about, I think one of the cool things that's happening is just seeing the junior tour. I mean, there's so many new young players. It's funny because when I was, you know, 2 years ago playing these tournaments, there were like no kids that were playing. And then when I started to, I guess, play more pro tournaments, and now the last 2 years have happened, I've seen more and more young kids come in, and it's just super fun to see because I think pickleball is definitely a game that really lends itself to younger players playing. Because it's not that hard of a game, like we've already talked about. I think it's easy for kids to pick up. I think it's a super fun game for kids to pick up. One of my favorite things about it is my attention span is not always that long. But in pickleball, the breaks in between points are a lot quicker. It's a lot quicker than tennis. In tennis, it's about 25 seconds. In pickleball, it's about 10 seconds. So, you know, kind of saying that my attention span might be similar to a lot of kids. And, you know, which I think would maybe say that it'll be fun for kids to play, too, if I like it. So yeah, that's one of the things. But anyway, I don't really know what else to talk about here in terms of the happenings. I really only know how to talk about pickleball. So we're gonna just talk about some strategical stuff that I've noticed. One of the things that I think is happening a lot, definitely at the top of the men's game, we've already talked about the big serve and then like the dipping third and then dropping the fifth with slice. But I'm seeing a lot of third shot and fifth shot drives. I'm seeing some seventh shot drives. There's so many drives that are happening. I mean, I watch all the pro matches. I'm like a junkie for watching YouTube and just seeing all these different players. And there's so much driving of the ball. And obviously the paddles have gotten more powerful, but I don't think it's just necessarily because of that. I think that there, you know, they used to say you shouldn't be driving it twice. You can drive the third, you shouldn't be driving the fifth, you shouldn't be driving the seventh. I think that's all silly. Because if you watch the top of the game, I mean, it's not like the players at the top of the game are just doing things willy-nilly for no reason. There's strategy behind it. And I think that if you don't, let's say, you know, you hit a decent third, but it's not your best third, and you've got a fifth shot where you don't feel super comfortable dropping it, or a seventh shot even where you don't feel super comfortable dropping that shot, I think it's a lot easier to just drive the fifth or drive the seventh and then earn yourself an easier fifth or an easier whatever it is, that following shot. There's no shame and no harm in driving multiple shots. I don't see why there would be. It's not like a drive is actually a riskier shot than a drop. I think a lot of people think that. They think, well, driving is harder, or maybe you're more likely to miss a drive than a drop, or you're more likely to, whatever it is, get yourself in trouble with a drive or a drop. I think that's totally player dependent. I mean, for me personally, I probably feel more comfortable driving the ball and making it as opposed to dropping the, you know, hitting a perfect drop off of a tough shot. And I think that the tougher the shot that I'm hitting is, so the tougher, you know, the return has come to me is, I think it's actually more likely for me to drive that ball. I drive all the time, and I don't really see why you wouldn't, as long as you're making your drives. I don't really think you should be missing your drives. I think it's actually a little bit of a mentality switch that happens, because a lot of players think, well, you know, you want to drive to be the star and hit like a winner or some sort of crazy shot. Really what it is just a setup shot to get you into the kitchen on the next ball. And for me, when I'm driving the ball, I'm just trying to make it. I'm just trying to hit it low. And then eventually, you know, if I drive it once, I drive it twice, they're going to either maybe miss their volley, but also probably just give me an easier shot to then drop the next one. Because just like I've said, drops are more precise than drives. You've got less court to hit into when you hit a drop than with a drive. With a drive, you've got the whole, you know, you could aim right at the baseline. But if you hit a drop, that there's no drop, that it's the baseline. The drop's got to go right into the kitchen. So I think that whole narrative of like the drop being a safer shot or an easier shot to hit when you're in a tough spot is kind of going away. And I think if you watch the top of the game, that, you know, the strategy and a lot of the ways of playing that happen at the top of the game sort of trickle down and players will copy that. And you kind of see, at least from what I've seen, like the lower levels or even just, you know, just the rec players will, they seem to tend to be maybe like 6 months behind the pro game. It seems like when the pro game starts to make these adaptations, then rec players, you know, whether they're watching pro pickleball or not, it'll start to, it seems like the rest of the game kind of follows the pro game in terms of strategy and how the game is played, which I think is cool. So that's why I'm here to tell you what's happening in the pro game so that you can be ready. So that's one way to think of it. So definitely another thing that I wanted to talk about, there's a lot of offensive lobbing that's going on. There's a lot of lobbing. And it's funny because I was the guy that said 2024 was going to be the year of the lob. I don't know if I was the guy. You know, I'm sure there were some people that said it, other people that said it. But I was always, like I was saying, you know, the offensive lob is going to be a very important shot, especially for right side players. And I've hit zero offensive lobs in 2024, by the way. Literally zero. I don't have the cojones to do it. I just don't feel comfortable doing it for whatever reason. You know, sometimes you get into a match or get into a game. It's funny, like a lot of players think that pros are like immune to this, the whole concept of feeling comfortable doing something in practice, and then you get into the game and then you just stick to what you know. I'm not immune to that. I know most of the, you know, it's not like the pros are immune to that. I am the same exact way. I was trying to practice the lob and then I get in the game and I'm like, not for me. It just doesn't occur to me.
All right, so now I'm here to talk to you guys about Selkirk backpacks. I probably shouldn't have to talk to you about them. I mean, you see them, you know, it's enough of an ad to see them at all these tournaments. I mean, it seems like everybody's got one, and I actually think they're the best. You know, I'm always begging Rob to send me more. I've got like 4 or 5 backpacks. They last so long, too. I think the biggest thing about Selkirk backpacks is that they're really durable, especially with me. I mean, I'm putting as many paddles as possible in the backpacks. I've got gallons of coffee in the backpacks, sweaty shirts. I've done everything possible that you shouldn't do to a backpack, to a Selkirk backpack, and I've had it now for 2 years. So I'm a huge proponent of the Selkirk backpacks. I think the Tourline ones especially are very good. They look cool. cool. They look sleek. I personally like the black ones. I'm known to bring two of them on court every match. So yeah, these are just my personal opinions on the Selkirk backpacks. I also think the team line is good. And yeah, I think if you want one, get one, because they're going to last you quite a while. And they also look pretty cool. And they don't necessarily just look like a pickleball backpack either. I mean, I can wear them pretty much and bring them wherever, and it doesn't really, you know, it kind of just fits in with any other backpack that you would have. So
I don't know. I stick to what I know. I stay in my lane, but eventually I'll start probably throwing it in. But either way, I'm usually on the left anyway, and I think that it's a better play from the right because you're going over in the backhand side of the opposing right side player when you go cross court. And those are the most effective offensive lobs, said it time and time again. Reason for that is if you go cross court with your offensive lob, you have more space to hit into. You've got an extra 5 feet because of the geometry of the court. Huge deal. I really wouldn't be lobbing offensively down the line too often. It's just a tougher shot. There's less space to hit into, and it's also a lot more straightforward in terms of coverage for the other team to understand who's taking it and who's not. If you go cross court with your lob, there's going to be more confusion maybe because that ball is traveling through the middle of the court. And as we all know, as we get down and down in level, I mean, there's middle confusion at the pro level. Don't get me wrong, there's some of it. But as you go down in level, middle confusion goes up. So I know for me personally, if I were a 4-0 or whatever it is, you know, I would be really working the middle confusion. I would be trying to lock, doing a lot of different things to kind of test that coverage in the middle. Because I've taught a lot of clinics, I've seen a lot of it. Don't underestimate how shaky the coverage of the middle can be. Not that everyone is not good at covering the middle, but don't be too confident in the coverage of the middle of your opponent, I would say. So anyway, that's another thing, the offensive lob. I also think that actually defensive lobs are, I would say maybe, I don't know if they're getting more... I would just say this. I think that the pros are doing defensive lobs pretty often also. And I think the main thing with the defensive lob is just getting it high. The higher the defensive lob is, the better. Because it's funny, like in tennis, you know, the higher you make contact with your overhead, the easier it is to put it away. But in pickleball, I don't think that's the case. I actually feel more comfortable putting the ball away, finishing the point from here, right? And then as I go higher and I reach up, it gets tougher for me to put the ball away. Just because you cannot spike the ball in pickleball, it doesn't bounce as high. So you actually want to put it away with like a linear sort of trajectory. If you go really from high to low and down, it's tough to put the ball away, which will then lead me to the final point here, putting the ball away off of high overheads. So the key, there's two ways to do it. If somebody lobs the ball high to you, and you guys should listen to me on this because I can put the ball away. I'm not the perfect player, but I am confident that I can finish points. That's one of my things that I can actually do in this game. So to put the ball away off of a high ball, there's two ways to go about it. Either you go for an angle cross court, okay? You go for an angle cross court because you might not realize this. I mean, if you listen to the podcast, you know, because I've said this all the time, but the distance, let's say you're on the sideline, right? You want to go cross court with your overhead. And we're going to cover this in our YouTube video if you want a visual, which we will, you know, show you. But anyway, if you want to go cross court with your overhead, that distance from sideline to sideline going cross court angle is almost the same amount of distance as if you went all the way to the baseline from sideline down the line. So you have so much space for a cross court angle overhead. I'm a big believer in putting the ball away cross court. You want it to bounce short. So when I have a ball, let's say I'm on, you know, let's say... You can think from my perspective. We're both on the left. You're on the left side of the court. Somebody's lobbed the ball up, and you're only a couple feet from that left sideline. You're all the way over here. You want to go as far across court to the other sideline as possible, and you want it to land short. Sometimes you want it to land even just a couple feet past the kitchen line, very short, because the shorter it lands, the farther, you know, the more aggressive that angle is, and it's just going to hit the side fence. Because in pickleball, there's not a lot of space on the sidelines. That's one of the issues with manufacturing of courts. I actually think there should be more space on the sideline, but we don't have to get into that. Since there's not a lot of space on the sideline, I think we should take advantage of that with cross-court angle putaways, making the ball bounce as short as possible. Pace actually isn't as important. You don't have to hit it that hard. If you can make it bounce 2 feet from the kitchen line at that angle, it's just going to hit the side fence. You're just going to win the point. It's just over. And people don't really utilize that shot enough because they think it's harder than it is. It's actually not as hard as you think because there is a ton of space to work with that way going cross court. The other way to put it away is to make it, it's a little tougher, but this is what I do normally because I just feel comfortable with it, is making the ball bounce as deep as possible. So with the overhead, maybe just, you know, aiming a foot from the baseline. That's a little tougher. I'd say if you have a tennis background, it's a little easier. If you don't have a tennis background, I'd go cross court angle all day. But if you do have a tennis background and you like your overhead, just make it bounce as deep as possible, because once the pickleball bounces, it slows down a lot. You don't want your overhead to bounce short. It's a lot easier to put the ball away with an overhead if it bounces deep, right on the baseline. So that is about it. I was going to talk about some players that are playing well recently, some players that I was really impressed by, because there are those, but I'm forgetting. I guess we'll have to cover that in the next podcast. Definitely give me some feedback in the comments here, actually. Let me know if you want me to talk some more about some other pro players, maybe some, you know, not like, I'm not going to talk about like the gossip and the drama of the pro scene, but like some, because I don't even know, I don't even have friends, but just like basically, you know, some other pros that are playing well, what am I seeing them doing? For example, like, I was actually impressed by Hayden Patrickwin. He's only about 5'4", probably, Hayden Patrickwin is, or something. I can't really tell. He's so small. But he's able to take balls out of the air with his backhand super well and put them away cross-court, which is what I was telling you guys. That backhand flick going cross-court, you can actually reach further in, which is, I mean, we'll save that for another episode. But different things like that that I'm seeing other players do successfully, how they're doing it successfully, and maybe how you can implement that type of stuff into your game. Let me know. That's about it. The coaching Instagram, we're posting it 2 times a week. It's growing so fast. It's doing so well. So make sure to check that out too. James Ignatowicz Coaching. Our Instagram page has got like 5,000 followers already. People are loving it. It's just more visual representations and stuff. So when I talk about the stuff, instead of just hearing me talk endlessly, it's, we actually show me hitting it, or we show my friend Ryan hitting it. So yeah. That's about it. Thank you for watching, guys. That's all.